The task force will help the department fully implement our religious liberty guidance.
I never expected to see, as an American Christian, that we would be doing that to other folks.
The museum is a private institution dedicated to preserving, exhibiting, and discovering homosexual history, art, and culture.
Every gay person knew that the Nazis didn't like homosexuals and that they wanted to get rid of them.
The museum contains a lot of research material documenting the lives of homosexuals during the Third Reich.
Our visitors are gay and lesbian people, but also heterosexual people. They're just curious and see, well, there's a gay museum.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Thousands protest Japanese MP's homophobic slur. Trump weaponizes religious freedom at home and abroad, and a Berlin museum captures decades of queer life and culture. Those stories and more this week, because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Frances O'Brien.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 4th, 2018. Two homophobic lawmakers from Japan's ruling party have sparked an unusual public discourse on LGBTQ rights in the conservative Asian nation. Liberal Democratic Party MP Mio Sugita argued against LGBTQ people being able to receive welfare in a magazine article published in mid-July because they're unproductive members of society. "These men and women don't bear children," she wrote. Sugita also staunchly opposes marriage equality because, she claims, it would allow people to marry their pets and lead to society's ultimate destruction. She even discounted LGBTQ youth committing suicide at 6 times the rate of their straight peers as being less important than preventing LGBTQ issues from being discussed in public schools. More than 5,000 people gathered outside the headquarters of the Liberal Democratic Party in Tokyo on July 27th to call for Sugita's resignation. Similar protest demonstrations were held in Fukuoka and Sapporo. A statement from the party issued late this week said that Sugita's comments showed a lack of understanding of the problems and failed to take into consideration the involved parties. But there was no suggestion that any disciplinary action would be taken against her. MP Tom Tanigawa caused a minor kerfuffle of his own, though it was so ridiculous as to not warrant any serious response, when he told the Japan Times that, "It's not that I don't approve of diversity, and it's fine if women like women and men like men, but it's not necessary to legalize same-sex marriage. It's like a hobby."
Two consenting adult males in Zambia were convicted this week of performing unnatural acts in a hotel room. 30-year-old Stephen Sambo and 38-year-old Jeff Chatba each face up to 14 years in prison. According to a report by Agence France-Presse, they'll be sentenced at a later date. Prosecutors presented what were described as incriminating videos and photographs of the two men. They were turned in by a hotel employee who spotted them through a window having sex. Same-gender sex is illegal in the South Central African nation for both men and women. Government leaders have been harshly critical of LGBTQ people in recent years. President Edgar Lungu infamously said in 2013 that, "Those advocating gay rights should go to hell. That issue is foreign to this country." The fact is, however, that Zambia's laws against same-gender sex are a holdover from British rule of the former colony of Rhodesia, which, not coincidentally, was frequently visited by fundamentalist evangelical Christians during that time. Rhodesia became the independent country of Zambia in 1964.
In better news for LGBTQ people, Hong Kong's government has apparently restored 10 children's books with pro-queer content to public library shelves. The Leisure and Cultural Services Department, which governs Hong Kong's 82-branch public library system, was reportedly responding to widespread criticism of its decision a few weeks ago to remove the books after being pressured by far-right fundamentalist church groups. The books include Molly's Family, Daddy and Papa and Me, The Boy in the Dress, and Different Dads. The move comes after Hong Kong Public Libraries was accused by Human Rights Watch and many others of appeasing hate groups and threatened with lawsuits. An email message from the library's department reportedly said that the books are now considered suitable to remain in the library collection for public reading adding that the community has diverse opinions on the handling of the 10 books and that the department was committed to safeguarding the principle of free access to information and does not seek to promote any specific beliefs or points of view through its collection.
13 members of the Paper Dolls, a transgender performance group, headlined a first-ever celebration of LGBTQ pride at a local night spot in the Northern Mariana Islands' capital city and largest island, Saipan. The local Mariana's Variety newspaper reported that they danced, lip-synced, and modeled their colorful costumes. A health component was added to the July 29th celebration on the Western Pacific Ocean Island when the Division of Public Health Services asked if it could provide STD and HIV testing and related services. Staff set up a small table at the bar, handed out informational brochures, gave away T-shirts, and did HIV testing, according to Commonwealth Healthcare Corporation Communicable Diseases Bureau Manager John Moreno. He told the newspaper that, "We want to be seen as part of public health, as individuals concerned about this special community. We want to help fight the stigma that can lead to depression and to health disparity. Public health is here," he said. "We want to make sure that we also celebrate health." Event organizer Charmaine Cascaro told Mariana's Variety that the success of the U.S. Commonwealth's first ever Pride celebration inspires her to begin planning next year's event.
Encouraged by an April Supreme Court decision that laws against private consensual adult same-gender sex were unconstitutional, activists in Trinidad and Tobago celebrated at the Twin Caribbean Islands' first ever LGBTQ Pride Parade on July 28th in Port of Spain. According to a report in the local Newsday newspaper, the parade was a culmination of 6 weeks of activities organized by the TT Pride Arts Festival Committee intended to heighten public awareness of LGBTQ issues. A health fair prior to the parade was held at Nelson Mandela Park. Representatives of several civil society groups joined queer organizations and individuals from across the country, along with their straight supporters, in the celebration. Committee Chairman Rudolf Hanamji told the newspaper that the main message is that the LGBTQI community is just like any other community in TT, and we simply want to exist and enjoy our human rights. Colin Robinson, of the Coalition Advocating for Inclusion of Sexual Orientation, told Newsday that we are part of the nation. The laws and the government need to catch up with us.
Equality activists used the annual Pride celebration in Jerusalem to keep the heat on Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israeli government over its refusal to include same-gender couples in revised surrogacy laws. Netanyahu publicly supported adding single men to the proposal that expanded access to surrogacy services to single women, but bowed to pressure from the most conservative elements of his coalition government and voted against that proposal 2 days later. Surrogacy was, until the addition of single women, only available to infertile married heterosexual couples. Most commentators believed that adding single men to the equation would have allowed access to those services by same-gender couples. Jerusalem's LGBTQ Pride Parade on August 2nd mixed celebration with palpable anger. Some chants during the march called Netanyahu a homophobe. Others held signs saying, "Proud to be equal," and "I want to be a father." The estimates ranged from 15,000 to 30,000 participants, but most reports agreed that it was the largest crowd on record. Because of violent attacks on parade participants in the past, including a deadly knife attack by an ultra-Orthodox Jewish extremist in 2015, there was a heavy police presence and tightened security. One participant tweeted that, "U.S. Jerusalem consulate staff are marching. What would Mike Pence think?" Another noted that a dear Hasidic man stood near the spot where 16-year-old marcher Shira Bankhi was murdered 3 years ago by a religious fanatic. He is holding a sign that says, "You will love your neighbor as yourself."
And finally, the nation of Qatar is getting a jump on homophobia ahead of the 2022 FIFA World Cup, placing it in a competition with this year's host, Russia, for most anti-queer host. The U.S. ABC TV network reported this week that 8 articles between April and July of this year dealing specifically with LGBTQ issues were deleted from the New York Times International Edition published in the tiny country on the Arabian Peninsula. There were blank spaces in place of the stories, each bearing a small note that the material had been exceptionally removed. The missing stories included coverage of the proposed ban on military service by qualified transgender recruits, reports on queer rights in Africa, homophobia-related tensions at the World Cup in Moscow, and a piece remembering a murderous fire at a New Orleans gay bar, the Upstairs Lounge, in June 1973. The Times told ABC that the censorship was at the behest of either the Qatari government or the local printing vendor. "While we understand that our publishing partners are sometimes faced with local pressure," a spokesman said, "we deeply regret and object to any censorship of our journalism and are in regular discussions with our distributors about this practice." Private consensual adult sex between men is a crime in Qatar, punishable by floggings and up to 3 years in prison. Government and societal condemnation of sexual minorities is pervasive. So in order to win the right to host the World Cup in 2022, Qatar agreed with football's world governing body to meet international human rights standards, including freedom of the press and protections from discrimination based on sexual orientation. Minky Warden of Human Rights Watch filed a formal complaint with FIFA this week, charging that Qatar's censorship has already violated that agreement. Qatar government officials claim to be investigating the situation.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending August 4th, 2018, written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazer, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at the new and improved thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Frances O'Brien.
El Dorado Bar also regularly featured an up-and-coming star, Marlene Dietrich.
Not everything started at Stonewall. German queer history is preserved at a special place we'll visit later in the program.
As your president, I will do everything in my power to protect our LGBTQ citizens.
But whose power will protect LGBTQ people from the Trump administration, both in the U.S. and on the world stage? The first blow in last week's double-barreled attack was delivered by Office of Management and Budget Director Mick Mulvaney. At a State Department ministerial to advance religious freedom, Mulvaney continued the trend of identifying religious freedom more in terms of the right to discriminate than the protection from persecution.
It's stunning to me that my government under previous administration would go to folks in sub-Saharan Africa and say, we know that you have a law against abortion, but if you enforce that law, you're not going to get any of our money. We know you have a law against gay marriage, but if you enforce that law, we're not going to give you any money. I never expected to see that as an American Christian, that we would be doing that to other folks.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions sounded the religious freedom cry on the home front when he announced the formation of a religious liberty task force in the Justice Department.
The task force will help the department fully implement our religious liberty guidance by ensuring that all Justice Department components, and we got a lot of components around the country, are upholding that guidance in the cases they bring and defend, the arguments they make in court, the policies and regulations they adopt, and how we conduct our operations. That includes making sure our employees know their duties to accommodate people of faith.
The religious liberty guidance issued by Sessions supports the right of religious employers to demand compliance with their beliefs as a condition of employment, and it would exempt religious organizations from non-discrimination policies for federal grants and contracts. The people of faith Sessions wants the Justice Department to accommodate were featured prominently at the July 30th event. They included representatives from the Liberty Council, the Family Research Council, and the Alliance Defending Freedom, all identified as anti-LGBTQ hate groups by the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Make them laugh, make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh?
I'm Kate Clinton, and while I can joke about the political state of our country, it's no laughing matter what Congress could do to our civil rights. An informed community is a strong community. That's why I'm inviting you to tune in to this station to hear This Way Out.
Ich bin von Kopf bis Fuß auf Liebe eingestellt. Ich kann halt lieben nur und sonst gar nicht.
This Way Out correspondent Barry McKay usually reports from Australia, But this week he goes into his personal museum for a memento from his 2004 visit to Berlin's LGBTQ museum.
Tucked away in the cosmopolitan heart of Berlin, known as Kreuzberg, is Berlin's Gay Museum. Established in 1985, the museum is a private institution dedicated to preserving, exhibiting, and discovering homosexual history, art, and culture. Although there are many organizations around the world which collect historical material relevant to gay men and lesbians, the Berlin Museum is the only institution of its kind in the world which is open full-time and has an actual building with exhibitions open to the public. The museum has changing displays for 3 or 4 months at a time with various themes. A recent exhibition featured celebrities from movies or literature who were gay, who could be seen as idols for gays and lesbians. Gerrit Horbacher is press spokesperson for the museum.
We are planning to open a permanent exhibit in December on gay history from 1800 to 1970. Then we will have our permanent exhibit that's, we are often asked about a gay history exhibit in our museum. People are often quite confused. They come here and only see art exhibits and they ask us what's history. And so we can show it finally in December.
The museum contains documents with a biographical and historical significance, a big art collection, a number of knickknacks and collectibles with homoerotic or historical significance. There's also an extensive library with about 12,000 titles and an archive with newspapers and magazines. Gerrit Horbacher says that the earliest magazine housed at the museum comes from the late 19th century.
Der Eigene was first gay magazine that was published in Germany by Magnus Hirschfeld and others, well, as the first gay magazine in the world. It was in 1896. It was not really sold openly, but they had a list where to send them and where to buy for people to buy them. Then it was easier in the 20s that you could find gay and lesbian magazines on street corners in these little shops selling newspapers and magazines.
In fact, the same people who published the first gay magazine in the world went on to form the world's first gay liberation movement. In 1897 in Berlin, Dr. Magnus Hirschfeld and Adolf Brandt founded the Wissenschaftliche Humanitäre Komitee, or the Scientific Humanitarian Committee. This was a political group which lobbied the German parliament against the laws forbidding homosexual practices. Hirschfeld was a social democrat, he was Jewish, and he practiced medicine. He gathered support for the gay cause amongst many of Germany's intelligentsia and liberal politicians of the time. The museum includes many of his pioneering works. He was even celebrated in song during his lifetime.
Hirschfeld kommt, dann rücken alle aus. Holt aus allen Dingen sich noch was Verdächtiges raus. Doch Hirschfeld sagt, selbst die Natur flammiert sich kolossal. Denkt an den letzten Sommer, nur auch der war nicht normal.
He founded the Institute for Sexual Science, and with that institute it was an aim for him to make people make a consciousness of their own sexuality, live their sexuality or their sexual lives as they wanted, not just according to society or some rules that were given by society. And he also made many surveys on the topic of homosexuality and transvestites, and he developed his theory of das dritte Geschlecht, as he called the homosexuals.
Gerrit Horbacher says that gay history goes back as far as Berlin existed, but it's the first written records, dating from about 1800, which prove that there was a gay subculture in the city at the time. So, when did publicly organised social events for gay men in Berlin begin?
My little boy, ich bleib dir treu. Ich möchte in deinen starken Händen happy enden, my little boy. Wie ich mich freu. Komm her, du darfst mich küssen.
Well, I think it started in the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century, when the Kaiserreich, there was a kind of first gay movement, and there were quite a couple of institutions and clubs and everything like that who organized many different events like balls and dancings, and all these publishers like making magazines for gay and lesbian people who were called different in these days, but there was also quite a vivid subculture in the 10s and 20s with many different things you could see, from the very cheap bar or coffee shop or something like that to a very luxurious dancing, evening dancing.
Ja,
das ist Berlin. Auf der Tauentzinn, wo nachts die Lichter der Straße erglühen.
After World War I, Germany entered its Weimar Republic period.
Die blonden Mädels von Berlin, alle, ja, das ist Berlin, auf der Tauentzinn.
This was generally regarded as a time when the arts flourished and new ideas and movements came to the fore. Magnus Hirschfeld founded his Institute for Sexual Science in 1919 with the distinct aim of further researching into the realm of human sexuality. It was also the era of the suffragette movement, shorter skirts and cropped hair for women, and the so-called flapper look. Differences between the sexes were being bridged. Gay culture in Berlin flourished. Much of the gay nightlife at the time, as is still the case today, was centered around Berlin's Nollendorfplatz and in Schöneberg. One of the most famous nightclubs in the 1920s was the El Dorado, which featured a number of transvestite performers.
In der El Dorado Bar saß ein Herr mit blondem Haar. Ein Fräulein sprach, sind Sie am Sonntag allein? Da lachte der Blonde und sagte, huch nein, am Sonntag will mein Süßer mit mir Segen gehen.
Yeah, we got a coin from the former El Dorado, the transvestite bar in Motzstraße at Nollendorfplatz. These coins you could buy as a visitor or guest there, and it shows on each side a dancing couple, a male couple, well, two men dancing together or two women dancing together. It was transvestite bar, and you could buy one of these coins, go to one of the transvestites being in the El Dorado, and get a dance with one of these transvestites, and at the end of the night or the evening, these transvestites took all their coins they got together and were paid for that evening by showing these coins they gathered from these different people with whom they had these dances in El Dorado.
Wenn die beste Freundin mit der besten Freundin, um Parteien zu kaufen, um Parteien zu kaufen und sich dann zu laufen.
The El Dorado Bar also regularly featured an up-and-coming star, Marlene Dietrich. Of course, Dietrich went on to become an internationally recognized star in her own right. In this early recording from 1928, she sings a duet with her on-stage girlfriend, Margot Leon.
Der Marsch ins Dritte Reich.
Marlene Dietrich had left Germany by the 1930s when the Nazis came to power. All gay and lesbian bars and meeting places in Germany were closed. Magnus Hirschfeld's Institute for Sexual Science was looted in 1933 by the Nazis, and his books were burned on Bebelplatz in Berlin-Mitte.
Der Führer sagt, jetzt kommt der letzte Winter. Nur jetzt nicht schlapp gemacht, ihr müsst marschieren.
Der Führer fährt voran im Zwölfzylinder.
Well, with the Nazis getting into power or getting more and more sympathies, it was everybody knew, or every gay person knew, that the Nazis didn't like homosexuals and that they wanted to get rid of them. The paragraph 175, it was enforced, so from 1935 on it was punishable. Just a glance that was too intensive and you could be punished for doing so. So gay people, they lived in fear to be denounced by other people, and the police, and they also had raids and everything like that, and imprisoning people, sending them to concentration camps. The punishments were very enforced, so it was much more strictly or severe than in the Weimar era.
Es ist ein langer Weg zum Dritten Reiche. Ein bisschen Liebe macht ihn halb so schwer.
The museum contains a lot of research material documenting the lives of homosexuals during the Third Reich, including documentation of many of the show trials of gays.
Well, it was a constant threat to be sentenced and also sent to concentration camps, where also many gay people died in the concentration camps, because in the concentration camps they were on the lowest level, while being estimated by the SS people, but also by other imprisoners in the concentration camps, and that was a very hard situation for gay people, because gay people were not looked at very favorably.
In the late 1960s, the paragraph 175 laws were finally modified, and in 1994 were completely abolished. Recently in Germany, a registered partnership law was introduced. This allows gay men and lesbians to register their partnership with the state and gives them similar rights before the law as heterosexual couples. The museum now collects such material on important modern-day developments for gays in Germany. Gerrit Horbacher.
Well, it's a kind of gay marriage because they are not the equal rights like a heterosexual marriage. It's not the same thing in the end. I think that situation is quite normalized now. There are quite a couple of people who are doing it, who are doing that marriage. Especially in Berlin, there are quite a lot of marriages and the first divorces, and it's quite of normal here.
So what kind of people come to visit the museum?
Our visitors are, well, in the end, everything you can imagine, from gay and lesbian people who are from Berlin or from abroad as tourists, but also heterosexual people who they're just curious and see, well, there's a gay museum, and they think, well, hi, what's that? Let's see what they're showing there, as a kind of fun thing or so, but at least they're open to come, and that's our aim, not only to have gay and lesbian people to make kind of, to get information about gay and lesbian lifestyle, but also heterosexual people to see what's happening, what's going on.
Today, in fact, things have progressed to the stage that Berlin's mayor, Klaus Wowereit, outed himself during the 2001 mayoral election campaign, reportedly to head off tabloid newspaper attempts to discredit him. The self-admission of being gay was, however, received positively throughout the city. And upon winning the election, Wowereit said, "The signal from this election is that Berlin is a tolerant city, an international city, and it doesn't matter which skin colour or religion or life orientation a person has." Barry Mackay, DW Radio.
Of course, much more has happened since Barry's Deutsche Welle trip to Germany in 2004. Marriage equality was legalized last year, and Berliners celebrated with their 40th anniversary Pride Parade this year on July 28th. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Wenzel Jones and Francis O'Brien, produced with Brian DeShazer, and from Barry Mackay. Marlena Dietrich performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors, who make this program possible. Help keep our 30-year streak going at the redesigned thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KBOG Bandon, Oregon, WGDR Plainfield, Vermont, 3CH Woodend, Victoria, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now y'all stay tuned.